In the dark, I play my dreams. Burn my bridge and blow my big strings. I'm the daddy with the new outfit. In the world, I guess I'm meant to be. I'm a king. Let's go. Everything. Bring a change. Making it last.
Welcome to episode 418 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Well, good to be here with y'all, and I'm a little bit rusty, as you can probably tell. But here I am back in the saddle, finally back to Billy's Jungle Palace of Love, high atop these mountains here in Western North Carolina. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. It feels weird to be back in Texas. I imagine it feels weird for you to be back in North Carolina. It feels equally as weird here in Texas.
Yeah, it is. It definitely feels weird. I guess I'll come to that in a minute. Folks, this episode, as always, brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. In Hickory, North Carolina. And look, if you can't be there, I understand these gas prices, the whole nine yards. If you can't be there, we have online live streaming as well. TPC, Tango, Papa, Charlie will get you 5% off. So go check us out. Go check out the website. I think you're going to dig who we got coming there, because Barbara O'Neill is going to be there all 5 days and speaking 2 to 3 times a day. You got to love that. Also, EMF Rocks. Where is it? I got it right here in my pocket. Bam. Yeah, these little crystals in there, man, they kind of, you know, I had the owner of the company on a little while ago, Dr. Franton, and these things and what they do for you is really, really something else. And son, I know you guys got to be feeling it because you left yours here.
Yeah, we've been passing around this one miniature one. But when we were leaving, I was looking at them too. I was like, man, are those ours or those are my parents? And I wasn't even sure. And then I just kind of, I guess, decided they were all y'all's and stuff like that. But yeah, I've got one on me.
Well, your mom ordered more of them for y'all from there. Okay. And we're just going to keep the ones you left. Cause as far as I'm concerned, dude, you can't have too many of those. So, yeah, EMF Rocks, 10% off with promo code PERMA. So we're going to jump right into it. Well, first thing I noticed, son, when I got back from El Salvador, first thing I did, first morning waking up, and I'll be honest with you, I wasn't looking forward to it. Looked up in the sky, and what did we see? Checkerboards everywhere, every single morning, until this morning. So I will say, on a positive note, and I was talking to also a couple of people today in different parts, and they didn't have any chemtrails either. So I'm curious if anybody in the chat, what you've noticed today, because it was actually a much darker blue than it has been. I'm starting to wonder if assets have been reallocated to the Middle East. I guess if there's anything good going on right now, maybe that's it, or maybe I'm just getting ahead of it, because who knows? They could start it up tomorrow. What did it look like in your place, huh?
Well, yesterday they were definitely spraying like crazy. They had rain. Was it Sunday? No. They had rain on Saturday here. And then it was sunny yesterday because we got back in yesterday. But they were spraying heavily yesterday because they had to make sure, you know, cloud cover and rain today and in the rest of the week. But so I can't see what it's actually doing right now because it's just complete overcast right now. But yeah, they were definitely spraying yesterday.
Yeah. So a lot of people, or at least a number of them, let's see here. Mountain Redding's been pretty clear here today. Conscious King. Matthew, yeah, they're all saying that chemtrails have been to a minimum. So I'm wondering if these resources haven't been allocated to the Middle East. So, well, whatever's going on right now, I'm hoping people take notice, because the whole time in El Salvador, all 14 days, not a single chemtrail at all, not one. And in fact, I talked to an expat down there who's actually from Australia. He moved there. He said they saw one chemtrail over the last 5 years, and it created such an outrage in the people in that country that they were practically, you know, up in arms. They were looking for the plane who did it. And I was like, whoa, man, why can't we get some of that? So anyway, it's good to see that today it's clear, but I'm sure it's cloudy somewhere else. But so yeah, folks, if you're out there, please, and by the way, hit that thumbs up, tell everybody we're live so they can go ahead and start suppressing the information we talk about. Well, another thing I did, we got back on, I'm not sure what day it was, but as soon as we got back, our main priority was to spend as much time as we could with our grandbaby. So we got to play with our little grandbaby, and she's just the little sweetest thing ever. And as soon as they took off, the following day, folks, you may or may not know about this person, but you remember a long time in the show, we would raise money for different organizations that were rescuing children caught up in either satanic ritual abuse, child trafficking, whatever the case may be. Everybody from Vets from Child Rescue, and now we work with Caleb House, and we raise money for them from time to time. And so when I heard Kathy O'Brien, who is basically the OG, I mean, I'm sure she would love to not have that distinction, but she's basically the OG in the first one I'd ever heard of coming out of satanic ritual abuse as an adult at this point. And her child was mixed up in it. It was crazy. I mean, her story is absolutely harrowing, but she was here in Asheville, or at least in Hendersonville, and I had an opportunity to go listen to her speak. So I went ahead and did that. And I even got a picture with her that I put on. Folks, if you want to know what a real American, everybody wants to call somebody a hero. Kathy O'Brien is a doggone hero, if you ask me. A real American hero. When she was out there talking about everything you're hearing about on the Epstein list decades ago, I mean, at least I've known about her for at least 20 years. She's been talking about this and being marginalized all this time. And she was blowing the whistle on some of the biggest politicians. I'm talking people like Gerald Ford, Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, you name it. I mean, Hillary Clinton too. She was blowing the whistle on these people long before the Epstein files ever came out. So it was bittersweet to meet her. I'll say that, because you never want to hear about somebody going through the awful things. I mean, the kind of things, folks, that would crush most people. Not only did she go through it, her daughter went through it as well. This stuff is real. And for me, it was a joy to be able to meet one of my heroes up close and personal. Somebody that I've looked up to for a very long time. Folks, if you haven't read her book, The Transformation of, and she spells trance, T-R-A-N-C-E, The Transformation of America. She breaks it down in there, and she has other books as well where she goes into a lot of this stuff as well. So she got out of it. That story in and of itself is just unbelievable, because most people never get out of it. And she was one of those people that suffered things that is just simply unimaginable. And when she had talked about the things that were in that Epstein file all these years ago, nobody wanted to take her seriously. Well, I hope everybody's taking her seriously now. And I say that tongue in cheek, because by and large, and folks, this is no exaggeration here. I would say 90% of the people I try to have a conversation about this couldn't care less. I met folks, I'm not lying when I tell you this. I actually met somebody who didn't A, know about the Epstein files, and B, did not even know we were at war. I don't even know how that's possible. I met a person like that, and I'm just absolutely shocked by it. I've often used Gore Vidal's term of the United States of amnesia, but I'm starting to think it's more like the United States of apathy. Because honestly, if it's not happening in their own backyards, and even when it is, because your kids are breathing in this garbage falling from these planes and they still don't care. Your grandkids are breathing it in and you still don't care. Folks, history proves. And if you want to know why I was in El Salvador, maybe I'll come to that in a minute. If you want to know why I was there, honestly, Michelle and I, when this whole Epstein thing broke, we were kind of at each other's throats and couldn't figure out why. And then we... Yeah.
It was the same here. Yeah.
We were just kind of like, what on earth is going on? And then finally, I kind of said, hold on a minute. Let's pray about this. Let's get a feel for the bottom. And both of us were dealing with the very same thing of being in the company of people, family members and otherwise, who honestly could not care less. I mean, they are eating children. they're doing the most diabolical things in the world. And I said, okay, we were talking about going to El Salvador and looking around. Let's go do it. Let's see if William can look after things. Let's go do it. That was the number one impetus. Now, we did manage to put some other things in there as well, but that was the number one impetus. Because, and I've said it before, find me a nation in history that's ever become this depraved, this apathetic, and the fires of doom didn't consume it. Find me one in modern history. Now, somebody's going to say, well, what about Nineveh? Yeah, but they were eventually dealt with. Somebody's going to say, well, maybe not. But the other example that I can think of is, believe it or not, in the United States of Amnesia. You know, during the Roaring Twenties, we had a chicken in every pot. Everything was going well. Bam, 1929. What happens? Stock market crashes. Well, some would say that that produced what they call the greatest generation. Okay? And to a certain extent, I agree with them. It was that hardship that created from the 1920s where there was, you know, everybody was doing great. Everything was fine. Everybody was living high on the hog. Very decadent and depraved, not depraved, certainly not to the extent that we are, but very decadent society. What cured it? The crucible of really hard times. And let's not forget that during the Great Depression, we had 90% of America that lived in the country, 10% lived in the city. And we still lost 8 to 10 million people during that time. Those are stats you don't hear about. Here we are, the tables are flipped. We got 90% that live in the city, 10% live in the country, and of that 10%, less than 1% of 1% are anywhere close to self-sufficient. Where do you think this leads? Well, I'm not going to go too dark right now, but I'm going to pull myself back and say, okay, well, just briefly, maybe I'll talk about it more. There was a lot going on in El Salvador, what I intended to do. I wanted to see if the needle moved in a big way, and folks, it did. If you watch that interview I did with Dr. Jack Cruz, he explains why it did. Because, number one, you have unobstructed sunlight there, meaning that you don't have chemtrails, and you have sunlight stability, meaning that generally all year long, the sun rises at 6 a.m. and it sets at 6 p.m. But the magnetic nature of that place, I literally did it. You could take a magnet, stick it in the sand, and it'll blow your mind. Yeah, that's what's going on. That's how paramagnetic that whole place is, because it's sitting on a giant volcano. Well, it's absolutely positively therapeutic. So if you have light, water, and magnetism, in order to keep yourself healthy, you got two of them right there. All you got to do is structure your water at that point.
Hey, so anyway. Dad, on that note, you have got to put out a warning just for me, specifically for me, when you say the things you did during that interview. Dad, I don't want to know anything at all about your libido. I don't, in my mind, yeah, it doesn't even exist. I don't need to hear any of that. Yeah, Emily was messing with me on the way out of North Carolina because I was listening to it as we were going through Hot Springs. Yeah, yeah, Dad, you got to put out a warning just for me. And then, hey, a couple of other things. For those of you, you mentioned Epstein and everything earlier. If you guys want to know what is absolutely not being talked about on any form of entertainment or media or anything like that, everybody is talking about Ken and Amy said, amen, William. Yeah, I need a warning just for me. But there's a podcast called Free the Rabbits, and it's done by Joel Thomas. He's a friend of ours. Awesome podcast, but today he just released what he was doing on mostly on Zorro Ranch. Like, why was he getting all these interviews or getting all these like doctors and scientists and stuff like that in his back pocket? Not just the politicians, but also doctors and scientists as well. And it talks about, the name of that episode is Epstein's Nephilim Children, Zorro Ranch, Eugenics, and the Occult. Everybody should check that out. And it's very, very curious that none of this is brought up or talked about in the emails or anything like that. None of this. But when I say it's not talked about in the emails, I mean that nobody's reporting on this in the emails, because this should be some of the biggest news that's out there, what he was trying to do and get done on Zorro Ranch, especially with genetics and things like that. So everybody check that out as well. And then you were also talking about the Ruckus, or you were talking about Caleb House and everything. I will be speaking at the Ruckus this weekend. It's a fantastic fundraising event to help save these children. If you guys can make it out there, that would be awesome. It's going to be in Fort Smith. It starts Friday. So Friday is like when all the classes happen. Saturday is like basically Bible study, church, basically. And then Sunday, I believe, is the ruck. It's just a 5K ruck. You can bring whatever weight you want. It's not a race or anything like that. But if you guys can make it out there, I'd love to see you guys. Yeah. So those were the couple of things I needed to get out real quick.
Yeah,
but leading Sonny, with the warning, Dad.
Yeah, regarding that, the only reason I brought it up, and then I almost shut down Dr. Cruz and said, "Hold on a minute, ain't nothing wrong with my noodle, dude. I'm just saying."
yeah, he called it ED.
yeah, I'm like, "Whoa, dude." I mean, I almost shut him down there and said, "Oh, I was thinking in my mind." I was like, "Dude, what are you telling people here, man? I didn't say anything like that." But no, the only reason I brought it up is because that's one of those. Look, I know we touch a lot of fourth rails, even fifth rails on this show sometime. And libido is one of those things that guys are reluctant to talk about. I don't hold any of it back. The whole reason is because I know that guys will not talk about it. So I did that. But man, by the time he got done with it, man, you'd think I was walking around here like Snuffleupagus. I'm like, hold on, man.
like hold William's on, a miracle.
I almost shut him down and said, hold on, dude. What are you out here telling these people? But no, he had there. I mean, there's clearly things that he said in there that I'm not with. But you know what? It doesn't make his conclusions wrong. There's a whole lot there that I saw the needle move in a massive way. So anyway, that was one of the things I really wanted to point out. There was it probably ought to break it down in another thing. But one of the things I did love about El Salvador is that they don't have that far to fall. They really don't have that far to fall. So think about it. If this whole world falls apart when it looks like it might, well, do you want to be situated in a place where everybody's a bunch of spoiled brats? Or do you want to think about a place where everybody's getting around in the back of pickups? And I mean that. Your food comes so easily. Folks, you could have dropped me off naked right there in those woods, in the jungle out there. And I could take anybody out there. I could tell you in 15 minutes everything you could do, and you could live out there indefinitely with the food. I mean, you got plantain falling all over the place, bananas, you name it. So much food that it'll make your head spin. So all you got to do, what's the hardest thing to find in nature?
Fat.
Exactly. How many different cultivars of avocados do you think I've seen down there? I mean,
well, definitely more than what we just see in the grocery stores. That's having like lived in a subtropical environment for an extended period of time, coming back and looking at the grocery store just absolutely irritates you. Like, we're only sold one type of banana. We're only sold one type of avocado. We're only sold one type of mango. Like, there's all these other varieties that have different flavors. Like, there's multiple different flavors to bananas. Same thing with avocados. Same thing with mangoes. And all those are kept from us probably because these other ones don't have a good shelf life or as good of a shelf life, or people don't want bananas with seeds in them and stuff like that. The bananas with seeds just means that this is an actual living plant that can be reproduced. That's one of the categories for definition of life is, can it reproduce?
Glad you pointed that out, son. And by the way, the bananas down there, otherworldly. Everybody's tasting Chiquita bananas in a store. These things, when you strip them apart, they're a little bit harder than regular bananas, but not that bad. And you bite them, it's like a custard. It's more like a custard than a solid banana. And it has a more banana flavor to it than anything I've ever had in my life. And then, like you said, son, we get one kind of banana. I don't know how many different cultivars of bananas, mangoes, papaya. I mean, as big as freaking footballs down there. And I'm like, okay, you could just drop me off with a machete and I could live here indefinitely. So that's something. So, but yeah, folks, I mean, look, I've seen this happening for a long time. We were eyeing El Salvador for a number of reasons, thinking, okay, do we want a permaculture demonstration? Let me know what y'all think about it, but do we want a permaculture demonstration site out there? Eric Sider has come up with the idea of, do we make a health retreat with a permaculture demonstration site there? Do we, you know, are there's so many things we can do, and we could heal people in record time. So let's say you were to come down and you're in one condition. Well, you're in that place for, let's say you stay a month. You come back, you're going to realize you are improved as long as you're not eating junk food. And honestly, if you're at a retreat like mine, you won't be having that. You'll be eating some ballin' food. And it ain't going to be all vegan. I can or no vegan for that matter. You're definitely going to, I don't know. There's a lot going on here. And I'm thinking, okay, this might be a pretty awesome solution for a lot of people. Sam, what's up here with this message?
So this is from Juby Joe. She's been saying in the comments on or in the live stream right now, may I explain your method and recommend your channel on John B. Wells' channel? He had a lady caller that said you would be a great fit, etc. I was tired but saw John take your name down. So yeah, I think that would be, yeah, Caravan to Midnight would be an awesome show to go to. What do you think, Dad? Would you like to be on John B. Wells?
Well, I was a fan of John B. Wells back when he was on Coast to Coast AM, and he was the reason when they fired him, I left Coast to Coast AM. I am a massive fan of John B. Wells. We were subscribers to Caravan to Midnight, and I don't know what happened, or I'd have to talk to Michelle about exactly what happened. But for years, I mean, I've been a massive fan of John B. Wells. And I think he was just too good, and that's why they got rid of him at Coast to Coast. It was so aggravating to me. I was like, okay, cancel my subscription, because I was paying back in those days.
He has like, best radio voice, and like his like sentence smithing abilities is awesome.
You could just sit here and listen to him talk. I mean,
like Anthony Bourdain.
Right. Not only does he have the voice for it, but there's also his delivery. He's really something else. I mean, and honestly, he seems like a pretty sharp guy, but I've lost contact with him, but yeah, feel free to definitely, I'd love to hear John B. In fact, I need to go ahead and sign right back up because I don't know what happened. Anyway, bottom line is there's food everywhere in El Salvador. I'll tell you what they don't have any regenerative farmers down there that I saw. I mean, almost none. There's one guy doing beef. He's doing the best he can. It was cool to meet him. His name is James. I'd love to get him on a program. And he's from a thing called Beef Back Better. He's the Australian guy we met. We had lunch over his house. Just a wonderful, fantastic, beautiful human being. And he's down there doing the best he can in the beef space. And, you know, they're working with the cows they have down there. But it's so dreadful that they're literally having to take the entire cow and turn it into grind. The entire cow. That's how tough these things are. But they have nobody out there doing what we do at all. So, and then plus, when Jack Cruz found out what I did, he was turning me over to, he was telling all of his millionaire and billionaire buddies down there about me. And all of a sudden my phone's blowing up, and it was definitely a joy, but you know what? I'm not going to do anything. I don't know. Maybe it's something like, hey, maybe it's a place we go for half a year. Maybe it's a place we go all year. Maybe William and Emily want to take this place over and we go down there. I don't know what it looks like, folks. I'm still trying to, there's a lot to pray about and a lot to think about. So maybe I'll circle back to it, but there was a lot of good things to take away from there. Not the least of which that every single day, son, the fishermen come in these little dinghies, and they've been fishing all night. 25 cents a fish.
Man,
that's what they're charging. 25 cents. And you know, fish is my favorite thing in the world to eat.
Yeah.
It didn't even matter, bro. I mean, they were catching all of it. It was like whatever came in that net, there was somebody buying it down there. It was just a beautiful thing to see. Straight from the ocean to the fishermen, and they're still jumping around in the doggone boat. I mean, you go up there, you pick them up, you talk about fresh. You can literally get the fish, bring it back to the house. I mean, you can feed a family of 10 for 10 bucks. I mean, on protein, I mean, yeah. Good night. And this ain't some tilapia, you know, that we're feeding everybody because we've overfished everything. This is, you know, legit stuff. I mean, they're pulling out snapper. They're pulling everything out of there. And then you can even pay some of these guys to go out there and take you out to do, you know, some deep sea stuff. That's something I'll have to give a shot next time. But I ain't going to be one on one of those little dinghies with no radio.
Hey, man, no 25 cents per fish is, I'm fine with paying that for sure. they can do all the fishing on that dinghy they want.
Yeah, bro. I mean, you just go up there and, you know, it's like 25 cents a fish, man. And these guys are, I mean, the average wage there, they're making like, if they're lucky, $1.50 an hour. And that's considered decent wages down there. So I was wondering why, you know, when the guy would open up for me to park, man, I'd pay him $5 and he would just fall over himself. I was like, man, what's going on down here? So I got on there and tried to find out what the average wage was. I was like, oh man, okay. So, man, they were rolling out the red carpet every time I rolled on there. And I think I was the only one tipping in that place, which helped with the language barrier because I don't speak any Spanish. But they started singing a different tune when you lay $5 down. So they were calling me $5 bill.
You weren't the only American there, but you were the only one tipping. I heard about some.
Yeah, I was the only one tipping. And believe me, they will definitely hook you up. All right. Too much time on that, but maybe I'll come back when I kind of get a more concise program of what we picked up in El Salvador and what may be some of the plans in the future. I'll definitely break it out here right on the show. All right. So, son, what's going on in your world, or did you already cover it?
No, I haven't really. Got back last night. So before I left, there were a bunch of things that I got in the ground that we had started. I got a bunch of tomatoes. I got a bunch of cucumbers. I got a bunch of stuff started and in the ground, all of which hates the cold. And then we had two 32-degree nights. At that point, I knew that, you know, everything that I put in the ground was going to for sure die. But I had a little bit of hope. Nope. It all died. All the tomatoes, all the cucumbers, all that stuff died. So after I get back from this consultation trip and before I go to the ruckus, I think I'm just going to buy whatever plants it is that I want to get in the ground and then just get them in the ground that way. So there's a cool little greenhouse in New Boston. It's like a little mom and pop shop. They're a little bit more expensive, but I'd rather give them the money than whatever Walmart's doing or Tractor Supply is doing and stuff like that. So I'll be getting those in the ground. Just trying to get caught up after being gone for so long. It just feels weird being back in the cesspool of Texas. It feels weird. Like I went to Walmart the other day or yesterday and I was like, yep, I'm for sure back in Texas. East Texas specifically. But last time I started talking about like wanting to leave Texas just because the general mindset here, I thought I was going to get some like hate mail after that via email and everything. Nope. I got a bunch of people just confirming like, yeah, Texas is not what it used to be. Can't get anybody to garden, build community or homestead or anything like that. Bunch of people quit once Trump got into office and stuff like that. Like it was pretty similar to the same complaints that I had. There's a couple of people who were like, hey, wherever you go, can you bring us with you and stuff like that. I mean, there was an older couple down by Houston. They've been farming their whole life. They have all the equipment, all the farmland, all that type of stuff. And all they're trying to do is find somebody in that area to basically like teach anybody who would be young and is trying to farm and doesn't have access to the land or the equipment or even the knowledge. They're just trying to like facilitate that, and they can't find anybody. They said that there's one young man that'll help them occasionally, like whenever he's not busy with his like day job. But other than that, like they have a whole separate house that they could live in. It'd be just fine for a family, all that type of stuff. And they can't find anybody. They can't find anybody in Texas near the Houston area. So, yeah. Every time I talk about Texas, there seems to be a lot of emails that I get that are of the same mindset. Like, yeah, Texas ain't what it used to be. But other than that, just trying to play catch up and get ready for the events that are coming up. And again, Ruckus is going to be this weekend. It's a charity event for Caleb House, who goes and saves and rescues kids and provides them a permanent home instead of putting them back in the meat grinder of the foster care system or whatever they just saved them from. So.
Yeah, so let me hit a couple of these questions right quick. Sorry if I missed a lot of them, folks. Somebody's asking, let's see, soil cleaner. Where can I buy that soil detox? It's Soil Saviors. It will be linked down below. You can go over there and check that out. And then somebody, King says, Milk Boy would not do well in Central American heat. Well, that's not true, because the area where I'd be looking is like at Dr. Cruz's house. I won't say where it is, but I'm sure he wouldn't want me to. But it's about 2,000 feet above sea level. The area where I'm looking is between 2,000 and 3,000 feet above sea level. That's where I am right now. So Milk Boy would do especially well in that environment because that's the one he's already in. And you'll find out that when you're at that altitude, remember, for every 1,000 feet you go up, you gain a latitude north. And you get all kinds of other benefits along with it. So one of them being, well, there's some things that aren't necessarily benefits, because the higher you go, the less fertility you have if you don't know what you're doing. So you got to really know what you're doing the higher you go. But he would do well because it is considerably cooler there. Now, during the day where there's not much going on, he'll be doing what he does here in the summer. He'll just hang out in the shade. Now, when it gets dark, all of a sudden it becomes a little bit windy and cool. And he would do well there. So I just don't know if I'd want to bring him if they're going to shoot him up with everything in the world to try to get him in that country. Right. So question, when will be... Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure how to answer some of these questions, but anyway,
here's one from Amy B. Dad. There will be snow later this week, but it's over 50 for a few days. Can I apply soil saviors before the snow?
Yes. Yes, you can. You can go ahead and do that, and it'll just go dormant if it gets too cold, and then it'll turn back around and come back. So yeah, you're perfectly fine doing that. Here's another one saying, have y'all heard about Moringa? Shoot. Just went off the page. Let's see here. Have y'all heard about Moringa seed / plant water as a water purifier? Absolutely. William, you're growing a lot of Moringa right now, right?
Yeah, I'm growing a lot of Moringa. And as soon as I can get the, what's it called? Not Etsy. Yeah, it is Etsy. As soon as I get the Etsy webpage squared away, I will have Moringa seed for sale. Germination rates already figured out. Clean seed, so it's not grown in like acidic soils or anything like that. Whenever I do video on Moringa, the number one question I get is like, where do you buy Moringa seeds from? So instead of having to like go through and, you know, tell everybody where I buy Moringa seeds from, I just found a good reputable dealer, bought it in bulk, and I'll be selling Moringa seeds for anybody who is curious about Moringa seeds. And then I'll also have Good King Henry seeds as well, which is like a perennial spinach, basically. It's like it grows in perfectly well in normal, full shade. There's a bunch of benefits to Good King Henry. And just like Moringa, just like comfrey, these are all plants, perennial plants that intentionally we're not taught about as we grow up, because they're just powerhouses when it comes to producing food, nutrition, and things like that. So,
which is something we all better start considering. I'll come to it in the main event here, but seriously, folks, the Strait of Hormuz is shut down. And if you think that's just oil, well, I got news for you. Every last person listening to this right now is a truckitarian, meaning that everything in your life got there on a truck. Well, what do they need to put in truck to get from A to B? They need fuel. And that ain't the last of it. I mean, there's a lot of food going up and down those straits. So if this thing lingers the way it is right now, we're probably going to have a disruption for a very long time. You'll feel the disruption, not now, but maybe 30 to 45 days from now. You're going to feel it probably till the end of the year. That's if things got back online right now. There's a whole lot of sulfur that ain't moving up and down there. Folks, do you have any idea how much sulfuric, no sulfur, no sulfuric acid, meaning you have a whole lot of production for things that ain't happening. And because we never think about it that way, this is why what William's saying right now, when you have perennial things that you can eat, you better be thinking about it, especially some of those things. I remember in Kansas, Michelle grew some chard. We were knocking ice off of this stuff and still eating it. Yeah. So you better be thinking about those things. Moringa, all these other things grow your food in a big way, because things are about to get, they're already stupid, but I'll come to that in a minute. All right, y'all, Wave Watch. Billy 100 will get you $100 off that. William, you got yours there. I think y'all left your charger here. We'll have to mail that to you.
No, that's Mom's.
Oh, okay.
It should be Mom's.
Okay, cool. Anyway, Billy 100 will get you $100 off that watch, and that thing works. Bond Charge. You see these glasses right here, these balling glasses, these blue light. William's got his red on. I got my amber on because it's still, sunshiny out here. You can use either one depending on time of day. But anyway, if you want some of those balling glasses to protect you from blue light, and believe me, when the sun goes down here, y'all, I wear these things religiously if I'm around non-native, light. Anyway, 15% off with promo code PERMA. It's Bond Charge. We got a link for that down below, BONCHARGE. All right, with that said, I wouldn't ordinarily go into the good news, but we went in a little bit long right now. So with that said, I'm going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, a global exorcism. It's hard to make sense of anything anymore. I suspect that is exactly the intention of the powers that shouldn't be. And I'm having a hard time coming to any other conclusion than they are demons in human suits. I think it extends further out into the population. How else can you explain people still defending these heartless acts of death and destruction? I remember when I first took a wilderness survival class with Tom Brown Jr. over 20 years ago now, he said we've already lost the physical war, and the only thing left is the spiritual one. I didn't really understand what he meant, but it's very clear now. Thinking starvation will cure the collective idiocracy seems hopeful at this point. What is starvation to the demon-possessed, red-headed lemmings who would gladly jump off a cliff if their orange-skinned savior demanded it? Every chance we've had to slow down the insanity bus, we've instead stepped on the gas. I think we're at that point where we all have to decide, do we make a stand where we are, build as much community and resilience as we can, or do we jump in the first thing smoking and head for a safe haven? Is there anywhere on this planet truly safe to ride out the wave of destruction that is surely coming? I don't know. If we truly only have the spiritual battle left to fight, does it even matter? One thing Tom Brown said that has stuck with me all these years and still gives me hope is that the demons can't trust each other. They have no collective will or power. And as you can see, they constantly throw each other under the bus. So that is our superpower. To be guided by love is to never be alone. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this Pimpcast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, y'all. I have no disagreement. Not one bit. I mean, here we are in this insanity, which really inspired the show tonight. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but everybody I know, I mean, I don't know any Rockefellers out there. Everybody I know, and I mean everybody I know, is suffering. They were already suffering before gas is about to go where it's going to go, before the cost of everything is about to go where it's going to go. They were already having a hard enough time. And I'm talking everybody I know. And now here we are in the middle of a war that didn't have to happen. And the thing that blows me away, the thing that floors me, is that the very same people that lied to us about 9/11, same people that lied to us about COVID. I mean, folks, you ought to see Ed Dowd's latest numbers on the number of people that are actually dead and the ones that are maimed probably permanently. The same people that lied to you about all that are telling you that Iran is a threat. I don't even know what planet I'm on where people are still rah, 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 rah. I hate to tell you all this, and it pains me to say, as a former soldier, we're the bad guys here. We are the bad guys here. I know nobody wants to hear that, especially boomers, for the most part. Now, there are a few that are awake, but by and large, I'd say 95% of the boomers I come across are absolutely in Plato's cave and so willing to be spoon-fed BS from MSNBC or Fox News, all of them liars. I mean, son, there was a little thing going around on Twitter today, and the latest thing, I'm like, are you people going to wake up where all the marching orders, all the news stations are saying the same exact thing?
Yep.
Same exact thing. Short-term pain for long-term gain. That's what they're all saying. And it didn't matter if it was on the left or right, NPR, Fox News, Fix News is what I call them. It's all the same. When they got to propagandize you, it's because they know they're lying. They know that the official story is a lie. People are dying. We probably lost a thousand troops by now, but you'll never hear it. They'll probably keep it back and lie about it later on. Who even knows? I mean,
did anybody notice that those six troops that they did admit to were all National Guard? Like they were all, They were all National Guard. What is National Guard even doing overseas? And I understand they've been doing this for a long time, but it's like right in the name. National Guard, not International Guard. What are they doing over there? But yeah, that stuck out when I saw that.
Well, son, I mean, on the heels of what Eric just said there, folks, there is a reason. I saw this coming a long time ago. That's why we talk about what we talk about here. This is why we've been doing the videos that we've done for the longest time, because you didn't have to be Edgar Cayce to see what is unfolding right now. There is no way. And folks, I knew that the nails were in the coffin the moment this Epstein thing came out and we saw a collective yawn. You tell me God's going to bless a nation that does that to the most vulnerable? And I'm telling people about that, and they're like, eh, I don't really keep up with that, but you keep up with the NFL. I can't do anything about that. Well, you can't do anything about the NFL, but you know everything about it. You know everything about a UFC fighter. You know all these things, but you're telling me it's a cop-out. It's BS. And I'm not playing that game. So I'm saying when you have a country that gets to that level of apathy, you better hold on to your hat, folks. Remember, when Rome fell, not everybody succumbed to it. So that's exactly what inspired this show today. And I'm sorry to have to bring this stuff up, folks, but honestly, we truly live in a place where, I don't know, tell me in the chat, y'all. I mean, I had a conversation with a guy today that made me feel a whole lot less alone. His name is Aaron. He and his wife, and they're suffering from the same aggravation. It's like nobody in their family cares. Everybody's rah, 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 let's go to war. And I'm like, do you even know what this means? Do you have any idea what the desolation of war will bring to this country, especially this kind of war, where it's not just let's go down there and snatch up Maduro and you're in and out? No, it's not like, hey, let's go murder Gaddafi, which is exactly what we did, Hillary Clinton and Obama. It's not one of those wars, y'all. We are talking, I'm not going to speak into existence where I think this is going to go. But there's a reason why I'm looking for options, y'all. And you better be too. So that brings me to why stacking functions means stacking cash. Farming through inflation and fuel shocks. Because I just talked to a guy today. I got to spend a fair amount of time on the phone some days of the week. And some of it is, you know, a lot of it's business and, you know, setting things up for, you know, the event that we have going in October. But I was on the phone with a guy that's in Vegas. And he said, man, you ain't even going to believe it, dude. He said, over here in California, I think Eric told me he saw it as high as $5 where he is in Sacramento. But I'm talking to another guy. Says, man, he's a trucker. He's like, dude, $9 over here. $9. And we're only a week into this. Oh, my goodness, man, where this is likely to go, and they got to pass on the costs. So anyway, folks, what William was talking about a little bit ago, you better be thinking about, and Michelle and I were just having the conversation that, hey, we're going to grow more food than we ever have this year. And we're going to have a whole lot that we put back. So we're going to make sure we got jars on lock. We're going to make sure we got everything we need to get through what is almost certainly going to happen. And folks, it's by design, like Eric was talking about. This is not an accident. They want to thin the population. Think about those Georgia Guidestones. They want to thin us down. And if you think Trump, Obama, Biden, the Bushes, Clintons, you think they all ain't in on it? I got news for you. The president is nothing more than the lapel pin on the suits of the people really calling the shots. That's why you see him betraying everybody from the second day he got in the office this latest time out. But look, it's not a left thing. It's not a right thing. It's a corruption thing, and they're all involved. Wouldn't shock me if every last one of them was on that Epstein list.
Anyway. If you want proof of everybody being involved, all you have to do is listen to that Pam Bondi deposition and everything. Just her response showed everybody was corrupt. As soon as somebody would ask her a question and she didn't like the question, she opened up her file and she's like, okay, well, this is the dirt on you. And this is the dirt on you. And she just kept doing that over and over again. And then notice how many Republicans just gave their time over to her to say whatever it is she wanted to say. Everything's corrupt. It's all corrupt. We got to remove ourselves from it.
Yeah, in a big way. And so for the people saying, well, how dare you? Look, I've been fighting this war for 30 years. Where have you been? Yeah. Billy, will you do a preparedness video again? I need a list. Yeah, I might have to go ahead and do that, Nancy. because we're definitely getting to the winter of our discontent, as Shakespeare put it. This is going to be weird. It's going to hurt for a whole lot of people out there. So let's get down to brass tacks on some of this stuff. Some of it we've talked about before, but right out of the gate, son, I'll kick it off. Look, we've done video after video after video of the chicken tractor on steroids. If you want a system, and remember, we're talking about things you can do through high inflation and price shocks. The chicken tractor on steroids could feed the entire world. It really could. It could provide all the protein you need in the form of eggs and chicken and provide quality compost that you can't even dream to buy that you can put out there and grow all your veggies, which are not only feeding you, but also the chickens. Plus, it's also an income source if you're producing compost. Like raising one batch of chicken tractor on steroids, I think we produced 21 cubic yards of finished compost in the time it took to raise those chickens. So, hey, what did I get out of the process? I got 75 chickens, so many of which I had to give away. I got 21 cubic yards of finished compost. You think that might grow me some good vegetables? Yeah. So that's one right there, son. I'll kick it over to you.
Well, on that note real quick, the only cost that you have into that system after everything's built and in place, the only cost you have in that system is the purchase of meat chickens if you didn't hatch them yourself and 2 weeks of chick feed. That's it. After that second week, they're off chick feed and they're completely on food scraps, garden waste, and the bacteria within the compost pile. Dad has, I think, three playlists on how to do it with layers, how to do it with meat birds, and then how to do it with chickens that you hatched yourself.
Let me jump in. I'm sorry. Let me jump in one. Yeah. So like you said, you'll need about 2 weeks of chick feed, which ain't that much. But if you're selling, if you have 21 cubic yards of compost, let's say you only need two of that, you could sell the rest of it for $100 at least per yard if you got good quality stuff. So you're money ahead. You got free chicken and free everything else. So you're money ahead, son. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
No, yeah, that was it. So my point is kind of similar to what Dad is saying, but compost specifically, you didn't even have to be done in the chicken tractor on steroids, because that is kind of a labor intensive system when it compared to like other chicken systems. Like, you're going to have to rake up piles every evening. You're going to have to dedicate one day to dedicate maybe 2 hours of flipping all the piles and everything like that. So as far as chickens go, can be a little bit more labor intensive, but focus on compost if you're not going to do the chicken tractor on steroids. Everything else about your garden, everything else about your farm or homestead is all going to work better and benefit from you understanding how to make really good, high quality compost. Like, that's less fertilizer, or you can just eliminate store-bought fertilizer completely. That's less watering you're going to have to do. That's less you're going to lose to pests and disease and blights and things like that. Everything that's less disease in your animals as well. Everything is just going to function better by you learning how to make really good, high quality compost, and gets you removed from the entire fertility loop of the soil. Like, that's not something that we have to play a role in. Once we set up the conditions, once everything's squared away, and as long as we manage those conditions and make sure we don't create any anaerobic conditions or compaction, it's a permanent fix. So compost, it's something that, like, a lot of people don't really, it should be your main focus of your homestead. Every system, you should be thinking, how do I compost this? How do I produce compost? How do I build soil with this? Instead, everybody thinks like, what's the next system I can put on my farm? What are the new animals I can put on my farm? Things like that. It's completely backwards. So if we focus on compost, everything else will fall in line. On to you, Dad.
Excellent point. So this one was, believe it or not, I mean, it's on the list because of El Salvador. And I'm talking agroforestry, edible food forest layers. Folks, in the tropics, you have technically 8 or even 9 layers to that forest. I know we've said we have 7 here in America, 8 if you count the mycelial layer, which I think you ought to. Anyway, agroforestry, if you were to go by any of these tiendas alongside the road down there, you'll notice there are never, ever, ever any annual crops. And if they did, that's the ones I wouldn't get, because, you know, they're getting them from some whatever off the back of a truck in most cases. But you know where they are getting, what are they selling? They're selling tree crops. They're selling papaya. They're selling, well, some melons that grow naturally on the ground. they're selling some avocados, but by and large, the locals don't seem to be buying them because everybody can walk 10 feet into the food forest, which is everywhere, and go get their own. So it's not a big deal. They're, you know, berries, these are things that you could sell. Tree crops is a lot, is one of those big things. I think that, so I love trees so much and all the layers that go with them. But you can also make every last one of those layers, all seven layers here where we are in this climate, you can make at least something edible in every layer, not only to fill your own needs, but also to sell it to the people around you, or even give it away if you have the ability to do that. Also, obviously, you got timber, fruit, medicinals, foraging opportunities. And then here's one of the big things I love about it, too, is that not one thing is in permaculture is in isolation. If I got a food forest or orchard there, whatever the case, make sure you organize it or set it up in a way. And I did a video earlier this year, or last year, I think it would have been, where, you know what, my cleanup crew is my sheep. I run them through there. They're going to prune off all the low branches. They're going to eat anything that hit the ground for the most part. Yeah, they will eat fruit. So, yeah, you can use them. And then, honestly, it's going to break up the pest cycle of that tree. So if it's not on the ground, then you can run chickens in there afterwards if you have it set up that way. So you're taking your tree crops and combining them also with your livestock. That's a cash flow trick if ever there was one.
Yeah. And speaking of the compost earlier, Being the Change said, overwhelmed with interweb information on compost, where can you direct me to get a handle on productive composting comprehension? So if you go to my channel, my most popular videos are talking about compost. If you go to Dad's, and I give you a bunch of different recipes to follow, all the way from like basic to slightly more advanced. Dad has a ton of composting videos. You guys got 18-day compost playlist. You got the 30-bucket method compost, a bunch of them. And then you could also check out Dr. Elaine Ingham, who is where we learned and refined. Well, we didn't learn how to make compost from her, but we refined our composting ability going through her. Yeah, any three of those. But there are, keep in mind, there's a lot of bad composting information on YouTube. I don't think it's done intentionally. It's just a lot of people don't have the skill to be able to look at it under the microscope, identify the good guys, identify the bad guys, and put an actual value to that. So that's what we learned from Dr. Elaine Ingham, and that's how we were able to refine our composting abilities and everything like that. So yeah, those three sources, me, Dad, or Dr. Elaine Ingham, that's an awesome source for making compost. But my next point is replace with local. So anything that you're sourcing, like the further away it is from you, the more expensive it's going to be, especially with the increased petroleum prices and everything. So try to source everything as locally as you possibly can, especially when it comes to, I mean, really in regards to your food and things like that. So the cow that was raised by your next door neighbor or some guy in town, even if it's done the traditional standard way, for multiple reasons, is going to be better for you than the cow, the organic cow that you're buying at Walmart in the freezer section or in the refrigerated section and things like that. So try to source as much locally as possible, even if it's not as good quality wise, like it's not as clean as you wanted it to be. It's still going to be better for you than the organic option that you can buy in the store. And it's also going to be protected from these increase, or it's going to be hedged a little bit more from these increasing gas prices, because it has less distance to travel. And also, if like transportation and all that completely, you know, cuts down or just reduces by a lot, you can still have access to your food. It's not dependent upon the like trucking industry and everything. So yeah, try to replace as much as you can with local sourced items.
Yeah, to that point, William's talking about some of the compost videos out there. Son, I mean, I don't even know how many people are also talking about putting molasses in your compost or your extract. Why is that something that's generally not a good idea?
Like, it's, people put a lot of molasses in their compost because they think they're feeding the bacteria. The only time I would ever add molasses. Well, yeah. The only time I would ever add molasses to a compost product would be compost tea. And it's very, very small amounts. And just because it would work for that particular batch doesn't mean it's going to work for your batch at home. And even then, molasses is, it's kind of hard to control. So you're going to feed all of your bacteria very, very quickly. They're going to go through and eat all of the simple sugars. And then they're going to do it so quickly that they're going to like consume all of the oxygen within the air within the compost pile. So then you've gone anaerobic and that food is still present. That molasses is still present. So now you have a bunch of anaerobic bacteria that's going through and wiping out this molasses, and it's cutting off the good environment from the good guys. So you switch from aerobic to anaerobic. And then, like, keep in mind, bacteria is just one component within your compost. Like, bacteria is also the most commonly, like, I've never tested a bag of soil that didn't have at least bacteria in it. What you're lacking, what most people are lacking, are fungi. And they can't really thrive in those anaerobic conditions. So instead of something like molasses, you'd be much better off just feeding, like oats, steel-cut oats. That would be a much better food option than molasses. So it's a more complex sugar or starch, and it's going to feed more of your like rare organisms such as fungi and everything. So yeah, stay away from molasses.
Yeah. Amy, I'll just cover some of these questions real quick. Is there a Midwestern substitute for avocado? No, that I'm aware of, but I know that some people out there talked about a cold hardy avocado. I don't know where you go about getting that. Where you're going to get a lot of your fats in the temperate climate. I wish we had a version of an avocado, believe me. Where you're going to get a lot of your fats, believe it or not, is going to come from nuts. I'm talking in nature. I mean, unless you grow it on an animal, which is probably the most efficient way of doing it, because they can convert grass and everything else into usable fat that you and I can use. But if you're going to try to get it yourself, nuts are going to be some of the best ways to go about doing that. And there are some nuts that do have a respectable amount of fat in them. But that means you're also going to have to catch them at the right time of year. So the next one I got here is... believe it or not, I can't even believe I'm saying this, is going to be agritourism that actually pays. Folks, I mean, I was offered like $5,000 one time to go up to New York to go process a pig. And I'm like, y'all ain't got no butchers up there? I mean, I'm like, what? You want me to come up here, $5,000 to come show y'all how to process a pig? And I didn't do it, but I mean, there, you know, there needs to be more than money for me to say yes to a lot of things. Not that we're the Rockefellers, not even close. It's just, remember, I govern everything with terms. It's an acronym, T-E-R-M-S. Time, energy, resources, money, and the most important one there is sanity. If that doesn't outweigh the other side of that equation in my mind, the answer is no. So given all the inputs there, it was no. But in terms of agroforestry, workshops can actually pay the bills, and you're also teaching somebody something that they really need to know about. It may not even be you teaching it. You may just host the person there. It's happened a number of times. People want tours. Now, I'm never going to do it out here based on some of the freakazoids that we've had already come by. This farm is closed. This ain't Polyface, y'all. You just can't show up here. We've had some doozies roll up in here, and yeah, I may be a nice guy right now, but if you show up unannounced to my property, you are not going to have a wonderful day. I promise you that. Do not pull up in here thinking, oh, hey, this is just one accident. Nah, ain't going to happen. You know, intensive workshops, dinners, that may be something you're into. You may bundle it all with products and sales. You know, what do you make there? What do you teach there? I guarantee there's not a person in the sound of my voice that is not good at something or something you can learn upon. You know, maybe you even film content while you're hosting. Maybe you want to go ahead and take that content and monetize it. Those are other things out there as well.
Yeah. So on that note, something that I can, that my next point that kind of adds to that is diversify income. Don't just make your income from just one sole thing on your property. What if that one thing on your property requires a lot of like miles involved? So you have to either ship it a long distance, or you have to order in a bunch of parts from all over the world in order to create this thing, or whatever it may be. Just try to diversify your income as much as possible. So instead of just doing, let's say you made knives, for example, like knives specific for homesteading and stuff like that, but all of your raw materials in order to make those knives, the prices are increasing. You end up like either your margins on your profit margins either really, really collapse, or or they just get tiny and smaller, or you get to the point where you have to raise the prices on your knives. If you have the other sources of income on your farm, whether it be like the produce that you grow, annual or perennial, or the meat or the tours or the agrotourism, whatever it may be, the more diverse your income can be, the less it's going to be affected by these random fluctuations in prices. So the same thing you would do with your food forest or your orchard. You don't just grow apples in your food forest. You know, increase the diversity in your food forest to increase resiliency. Same thing you're going to do with that is what you're going to do with your income. Try to make your income from as many sources as possible, and it'll be better protected from these price fluctuations.
Think about the next one I got here is think about value-added products. You know what? It's who do you think makes more money at a farmer's market? The guy selling raw milk or the person selling raw milk cheese? Is it the person selling goat's milk, or is it the person making goat's milk soap? It's always the person who has a value-added product because it required more labor, meaning that you can get more for it. So instead of just bringing raw things to, I think you always should, because I like to give people the option to be able to do what it is they want to do with it. You know, instead of just bringing milk there, maybe you want to bring cheese, or maybe you bring some milk, then you have some cheese, which you're going to make more for. How about some yogurt? Maybe you got soap, you know, in terms of fruit. Okay. Maybe you have some cider, some jam. Maybe you're making vinegar out of it. What about the herbs? I mean, you can make salves, tinctures, all these different things that you can have where you can add value to a product. Like when I make bone sauce, the only person on the planet, to my knowledge, that makes it to the intensity that we do. Now I'm going to be working on it tomorrow for all the people that are asking. Looks like I got some decent weather where I can actually get it done, because y'all are absolutely blowing me up right now. And I appreciate it, but I'm not going to make it substandard, folks. I will not do it. I mean, you can cut it if you want, but I'm not that guy. But my point being is I take bones from animals that maybe I processed, got a few of them out there, and I turn it into a product that keeps deer away for a long time and is very effective. There's nothing better out there and if there was, believe me, I'd be using it. So that is a value-added product. I'm taking bones, and I'm, through time, technique, heat, and water, and a few other things in there, I'm able to take what would ordinarily be bones and turn them into a product that's worthwhile. So you want to be thinking about that as well. So, think about those value-added products. It makes all the difference in the world.
Real quick, Silver Sage said, I would love to teach people on my new farm. However, how can you weed out the weirdos prior to allowing them on your property? The main thing, and this has worked with consultations as well, is increase the price. There's going to be people, once you increase the price, not crazy amount, you'll have to play around with it and figure out what's the price point that works for you. But by increasing the price, you weed out everybody who's not there for the information. That way, like, you know, you do, let's say, a farm to table dinner, you host that or something, or you do a farm tour or whatever. If the price is super cheap, people are going to go there just to come talk to you and get, so they can say that they hung out with their favorite YouTuber or whatever. But if you increase the prices, you're going to weed those people out, and then you're going to have people left that are there for the information, not just trying to, you know, hog all the time and everything like that. So first one is increase prices. That's what I would say. Do you have anything for that that might help her?
No, son, that's exactly what I would recommend. In fact, that's the whole reason why when I used to process animals with Jason from So the Land, I insisted on making the prices much higher, because I only want serious people there. I'm not there. I am there to show you how to do a task, and I want people who are serious about doing it. And I don't care what the money is to me. That's why if I was worried about the money, I'd go up to New York and go butcher a pig for $5,000. I don't like anybody wasting my time. And if you're there for a photo op, I really don't want to be there. I would rather, if there's times where we can hang out, that's all well and good. But if we're there to learn or work, I want to learn or work. And so, like William said, it weeds out the people that are not serious at all about it. I hate doing it that way, but there were times where William and I tried to do classes in the past. And if you don't charge something, people fundamentally think it's worthless. So you got to charge something, but you can't make it so low to where people are like, hey, party, you gotta make some value in it, and you gotta make sure you deliver.
Which the part that pisses me off the most about it is that the people who are viewing it as worthless not only waste their time, but then they waste the time of everybody who's there trying to actually get the information. They will be the biggest nuisance, and they'll just be the loudest ones there. They'll be interrupting constantly. They'll just ruin the experience for everybody else too. So keep that in mind. And then also, if you're very open and honest about your opinions on the internet, that kind of weeds out the weirdos too. So there's that. But the next thing I was going to say is try to reduce the amount of systems that are dependent upon petroleum on your property. Like Jeff Lawton's farm, for example, he has 60 acres, and I forget how many hectares that is, but his entire farm can be run without a single drop of petroleum at this point. Now that it's built and it's up and running, the entire property is just fine. Everything, the water's all gravity fed, the electricity is all solar generated. Nothing requires a tractor. Everything that he uses the tractor for could be used just with like manpower if you wanted to. And really the only thing he used this tractor for was to mow some fields for compost ingredients, but a couple of machetes, a couple of scythes, you can do the same thing with just a couple of people or just a couple of days by yourself. You can get the same amount of compost ingredients. All that did was just expedite how quickly you could get compost ingredients, but nothing on his farm is 100% dependent upon the petroleum working. Versus something like Joel Salatin's farm. There's a lot that he's doing correctly on Joel Salatin's farm, but it's also petroleum dependent as well. He has to have access to a tractor just to move some of his structures or four wheelers, whatever it may be. It's very petroleum dependent. Whereas Jeff Lawton's is not petroleum dependent. The market where he would sell produce and everything is like you just follow this one path coming off his property, and there you go, you hit the Channon market, and it's right there, and that's where he sells all of his petroleum. So he doesn't even have to ship anything out in order to sell anything. And then also the other forms of income, he does consulting as well, but he also does online permaculture design courses. So that is a product that's completely independent of petroleum. But try to get your farm off of gas products as much as possible. And that'll produce a more resilient farm as well.
Yeah. My last one here is, sell starts. I mean, even, okay, if you were to just get a bunch of, M111 rootstock and graft a bunch of apples on there, folks, do you have any idea how much money in the markup that is? Do you have any clue how much money you can make out of your garage on Craigslist just by selling trees? I mean, the nasty thing that they do at a lot of these garden stores is they'll take a 1-year plant and put it in a 5-year pot and charge you 5-year pot money. And it burns me up every time they do that. I hate it. It's downright dishonest. But you could sit here and you could sell either bare roots, and you could do this very locally. You could do it through Craigslist. I mean, you could do that in a big way, or just sell the sign wood straight out. Next time you go out and do some pruning, okay, take it, chop it up, put it in the Ziploc, put a little bit of, make sure you keep it moist, and then stick it in the crisper in one of your in the fridge. You can sell starts. Look at what people are paying right now for plant starts, you know, where we're coming in Nebraska season. I mean, you could probably make some nice money doing that, and you could have them come to you, especially during this time where folks, I know we haven't hit it yet, but we will. If this thing keeps on, we are about to be in bad shape. But you could have folks come to you looking for starts. If you're already doing, let's say you're doing some cabbages coming up, maybe do 100 more. Maybe you charge $3 or $5 a piece for them. I don't know what the going rate is. But yeah, there's a whole lot of different ways you can make money on there. You know, all the pruning you did from the trees. Okay, can you sell those? You sell that breeding stock, especially if you got trees like this peach out here. I got 400 pounds off it last year. Man, son, I'm about ready to cry because I know we're probably going to get hit with another freeze. And I got even more on all these peach trees right now. I mean, on just one tree, it was 400 pounds. Based on what I'm seeing here, I'm looking at 600 pounds just on one tree, one cultivar alone. And I'm like, oh my goodness, the bees are out here. They're out here doing their thing. Everything's starting to come around. And yeah, so it is what it is. But anyway, folks, you can ship small high margin profit. You can make high margin profit from just very little effort. So think about those things, son.
Yeah. So I was at Walmart today. They were selling single plants. You know, those little, was it burpee cups? It's basically like a small pot. They were selling plants for $5 per plant. So if that doesn't tell you that that's a high profit margin industry, I don't know what will. And then real quick, Donald Beck was talking about like being able to glean a lot of information from us for free from YouTube and everything. Back to the prices real quick. That just because you increase prices and you might feel bad because some people are excluded from that doesn't mean you can't do like scholarships to whatever class you're doing and stuff like that. So somebody could email you, somebody could write in, explain their situation maybe, and then you could offer them a scholarship if you felt led to do so. But that was just a little side note. The next thing is produce your food's food. So your omnivores, right? Your chickens, your pigs, whatever it may be. I mean, even your ruminants, try to produce as much of your food's food as possible. So chickens, there's like feed plots that you can just scatter seed. Like you can just get a handful of seed, start tossing it on the ground, water it and let it germinate and everything like that. And then there you go. And then you can bring your chickens to that, cut it down so they have access to the seed heads and everything. But try to produce your food's food as much as possible or use other people's waste streams for your food's food. So the animals that you would eat, you can get their feed from other people's waste streams, or just focus on like for your ruminants, for example, try to do the Jim Gerrish stockpiling forage method if you can. Try to get really honed in on your grazing skills so that way you don't have to purchase hay through the winter or even the summer or even late summer like they've been doing here in Texas lately. Here in Texas, there's absolutely no reason people should have to buy hay, especially going through the winter. But there's people who feed hay all year long here, and it's because they don't have their grazing techniques or their grazing skills down. So the more you can produce your food's food, the better you are at that, the less dependent you are going to be on these inflated products or these inflated fuels or feeds or hormones or antibiotics, things like that. So yeah, when it comes to your ruminants, get better at grazing management. And when it comes to your omnivores, try to grow as much of their food as possible or use somebody's waste stream to feed those animals as possible.
Son, I'm glad you brought up that point. I'll just say this before we close here. I'm glad you brought up the option of maybe doing some trading or some horse trading in terms of these courses or, you know, there have been people that wanted to trade certain things that I didn't necessarily need, but I appreciated the fact that instead of saying, can you give it to me for free? You come up with a way of saying, hey, can we trade for it? Because when I look back at it, when I was like, there's been times in my life, y'all, I've been at the, as high, you know, been pretty high in the rung, been pretty low and been in the middle, been in all those places. So I can absolutely relate and spent more time collectively in that bottom part. But I remember telling somebody when I wanted to get into the butcher's trade, I said, I will work for free. I will work. And I've done that on a number of other things too. I will work for free in exchange for you to teach me this craft. They thought I was crazy at first. They didn't even call me back. I kept hitting them up. I said, look, man, you don't even let me be a butcher. I'll just sweep the floors or whatever, mop the floor, whatever, man. Just let me be in the environment. Well, they saw that I was determined enough that all of a sudden, they bring me in there, and that's a whole story unto itself. But the point being, one of the proudest days of my life is when the guy running the butcher shop, he's in there yelling at the other young kids that were in there at the time. You know, I was in my 30s, I think, late 30s. And he's sitting there yelling at these kids saying, look, how is it the best employee we have here doesn't even get paid? And that made me very proud because, you know, it showed my work ethic. But honestly, if you can do that, if you want to go out there and learn a trade, if you want to learn this, well, tell somebody you'll work for free. Because honestly, if you look at the history of apprenticeship, that's exactly how it used to go. You would go there and learn this trade with the expectation of nothing more than room and board. And you may have had to share that room with a bunch of other people. So that's what it took. That's the history of apprenticeship. And it's the best modality to learn. So yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's not all dollars and cents. Half the time, the price of certain things when it comes to education is to keep out the people that aren't going to be serious. And I don't, like Jack Cruz often says, Dr. Cruz, you know, time is your most important asset. And I don't want it wasted. If we are there to work, I'm there to work. If we are there for frivolity or whatever the case may be, well, there's a place for that too. But if we don't show up to work and then, you know, we don't actually do anything, I mean, that's an embarrassment to me. If I go over there to help somebody out, you better believe me, I'm there to work. And if I'm there to help you move and you aren't packed, well, it tells me you have no respect for my time. Yeah, my biggest pet peeve there.
You reached deep for that one.
Yeah, but I mean, if you or if you want me to help you do certain things and you didn't set up, you waited until I got there before you decided even to get the knives out. I mean, come on, that's not a that's not being respectful of my time. So yeah, it's things like that, folks. So hopefully that was a blessing. Anything to add, son?
Just slightly different topic. Juby Joe, yes. Send our name to John B. Wells. Everybody, we're ready to blow up if people are willing for the or wanting the information. We're trying to get this information to as many people as possible. And when I say that, I don't mean like this content obviously isn't for everybody. It's not for people who are sitting there watching the Super Bowl. It's not for people who are wanting to stick their head in the sand and not do anything or fight against whatever is going on right now. And the audience at John B. Wells is the perfect audience. People who are awake, people who are probably prepared or in the midst of being prepared and probably thinking about that resupply. So that, yeah, that would be fantastic if you could spread our name as much as possible. And it will help the suppression that's going on as well. So it is curious to me that I got that strike in November, that community guidelines strike in November, and my views were throttled way down until I took their like re-education class. And then all of a sudden I have people watching the videos again. People are all of a sudden getting notifications that I put out a new video and things like that. So yeah, any help with that would definitely be appreciated.
All right, y'all, that's going to do it for us. Hopefully this was a real blessing to you. It's definitely a blessing to be back and do this podcast again. Till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
This ring will beat that run deep. It's done from song. Harmony begins in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune to the beat, feel the fire and thrive.